KFNX News Talk Radio 1100, it's Chatterbox, where you'll find the latest news, interviews, and updates about the gaming world. The views and opinions expressed are those of the host, the guests, and callers only, and not necessarily those of KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. And now, here's your host for Chatterbox.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. My name's Ara.
And I'm Colin.
And we've got a special guest here tonight. It's Caitlin Ellis from our local Phoenix IGDA chapter. Say hi, Caitlin.
Hi.
Now, I'll just ask you, what's the IGDA?
The IGDA is the International Game Developers Association, and I am the chair of the Phoenix chapter, so we have a monthly meeting here in Tempe and organize lots of events targeted at local game developers.
Cool. So we'll get back to that. I didn't know the acronym, so I was like, okay, you're the woman for that job. So I'm glad that we got that figured out. All right. So as you guys can hear, Alon once again is absent. This time he has a better
excuse. He's in the Bahamas right now.
Yes. So that's a better excuse than getting married. I told him to go to Jamaica, but he wouldn't listen to me. He would rather go to some less war-torn country, despite all the drugs. But, oh well. Maybe he'll find his way there anyway. But he's actually going to be gone for like 2 weeks, right?
Yeah, so it's us.
So it's Colin and me, and next week we're actually going to have another secret guest. So that'll
Ooh.
Be really cool. Yes, I like to keep you guys in suspense. Let's see. We've got our chat room, right? What's our website, Colin?
www.chatterboxgameshow.com.
All right. So if you're hearing us, you can go there and you can, you know, check out the chat room and find some.
Say hi to me.
To Colin. He's on there. There's a bunch of other people on there. If you want to give us comments, if you're too shy to call us, you can do that. If you're not too shy to call us, you can call us at 866-536-1100. You've got 55 minutes to call in. So let's see. Why don't we just start? We usually like to start with just talking about, you know, games we've played lately or what's new in the news lately. So Colin, have you been playing anything lately?
All right. The one game I want to talk about tonight is Brutal Legend.
Okay. So I actually haven't played Brutal Legend. Have you played it, Caitlin?
I have not played it.
Okay. So you're the Brutal Legend expert.
All right. Let
here.
Me set down the pattern for Brutal Legend. It's a Tim Schafer game, so it's really funny. And it's basically an imagination of what if, like, the metal world was real, like, the cover of metal albums was real.
Is it really funny, though?
It is pretty funny. Like, it's Jack Black's the main character, so if you don't like Jack Black, then I wouldn't recommend it. And the humor is the best part of the game, I think. A lot of the game blogs and everything bashed it because one of the big features was that there's an RTS segment of the game that was completely hidden until the game actually came out.
Okay.
And the mechanics are a little clunky. But it's not as bad as everyone made it out to be, at least I think.
So this is funny because I've actually I hadn't heard about what happened to Brutal Legend in a while until actually earlier today I was looking at some blogs and they mentioned that it didn't sell quite very well at all. So I don't know, have you played like his previous games? How do you think it stacks up to the previous?
I played Psychonauts and I really like Psychonauts.
So Psychonauts versus Brutal Legend?
At first gameplay I'd have to say like Psychonauts, and Psychonauts is really funny too, but Brutal Legend, it's like more of an action game. It's like a brawl. It's like a brawler, and then you have a car racing game, and you have an RTS. So it's a big amalgamish of all of those different genres in one game. And the RTS segments, they are a little weak, but you can get through them. And I think just to get to the gooey center, that is the humor of the game, and like the fun slashing combat and stuff like that.
Okay, so you're a big fan of the gooey center.
Yes.
All right. That's cool. All right, there's a couple games that actually, one just came out, Deathspank. And then I also want to talk a little bit about Scott Pilgrim, which is,
woo.
This is funny because I never heard about Scott Pilgrim until I heard about the game, right? And then I did some research and then I found out, no, Scott Pilgrim is not something new. It's something pretty old. Yeah. So there's been like a comic book series. Do you guys read the comic book?
No. I've read a little bit of it.
A little bit of
it.
So that's been around for like a while.
There's like seven volumes now.
Yeah. Now, it's funny because I heard about the game first and then I saw the trailer for the movie. I'm like, wow, did they make a movie based on a game? No, of course not. They wouldn't do anything like that. Not a cool one anyway. So the film and the game are based on a comic book series. And So this game is getting a lot of attention because it's got some really cool retro-style 2D graphics. There's this this guy named Paul Robertson, I believe is his name. He was the guy who basically did all the character designs, and he's this really, really amazing 2D pixel artist.
Yeah, he did that. There was like zombies or something that he did.
He does, yeah.
The Squid series or something?
He does a lot of stuff. There's a lot of like animations and things like that that you can see that he did on the internet. I don't know if this is his first game, but it might be. I'm going to qualify that with a might. And it was funny because you and me, Colin, we were talking before the show, and we were talking about Scott Pilgrim. You're like, yeah, Scott Pilgrim. I'm like, yeah, I'm not too sure about Scott Pilgrim. Right? And you're like, what? You weren't too sure about what's that other
Limbo.
Game? Limbo. What's wrong with you? Why can't you get excited about games? And I'm like, yes, you know what? I have this disease called I'm not excited until I play it because I've bought so many games. There's so many times I've gone up. There's just one time I remember I went to this place called Game Dude in Ventura in California, right? And there's this like Japanese import game, and that was during the time like Super Nintendo. I was like all into importing Japanese games. And this, you know, there's this one game called Musha, right, that I saw screenshots of, and I was like, oh, this looks so cool, right? And I was like, but I wonder if it's good. So I asked the guy there, like, is this game good, right? This is like impressionable little me, right? Is this a good game? Yes, it's a good game. Okay, I'll buy it.
But you trusted a salesman to sell you a game.
Dude, I'm like 15, okay? Yes. And I did. And that scarred me. And so you can thank that salesman.
All the childlike wonder is gone from your eyes.
It is. It's really a disappointment. It's all just rough times for me from here on out. So I played a little bit of Scott Pilgrim. I thought the mechanics of the game were actually pretty stilted and uncomfortable. And, you know, I didn't play it for a long time, just a little bit, but that was my first impression of it. And it's just kind of, this kind of brings up the larger subject of, you know, games that, and I don't know if Scott Pilgrim will turn out to be in this category or not, but it's a good thing for us to talk about anyway. You know, games that they're all about looks, right? Or they're all about the concept. Like the concept of the idea is really appealing. It looks awesome when you watch video of it. It's awesome whether you're into, you know, high production 3D graphics or really old school style stuff. But then when you come to the actual like mechanics of actually playing the game, then there's something missing, right? And if you're a 15-year-old and you've just bought your game, you start confabulating all kinds of reasons why it's actually really awesome. And maybe if you're a little older, then you can admit that it's a crap game. But yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of skeptical about. I mean, I love the art style. You know, that's like it's totally, totally cool art style. But
that's the hook.
The question is, can it deliver something? Is that one? Is that a big enough hook? Which, unfortunately, in games, it seems to be.
Oh, it definitely seems to be. Like if you look at a game around the time of E3. People spend so long getting their trailers ready and getting samples ready for E3 that it doesn't really even matter at that point what the gameplay is because they're just showing you a trailer or something like that. So they just try to make it as pretty as they can. And I think that this might be another example of that.
Yeah, when we saw Call of Duty Black Ops E3, it was like we didn't have any hands-on stuff, but the game looked great just because everything they show us, so you can get a helicopter, fly around, and go kill people and stuff like that, and it's actually off rails.
Yeah, and
but it's not no hands-on.
This
you know?
Is completely ironic because the Scott Pilgrim game. The beautiful thing about it is the gigantic pixels, right?
Yeah.
So I can't believe I'm actually talking like this about a game whose claim to fame visually is few colors on the screen and lots of really big pixels. But, yeah, there you are. I don't know. It's interesting because, you know what? Caitlin, you'll learn that sometimes my mind just completely draws a blank, and then
okay.
We move on, and this is one of those times.
Caitlin, so. Have you been playing anything recently?
I have actually been going back through and playing Pokemon.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I've been playing Soul Silver. That's one of the newest ones, and then it just kind of made me want to go back and play some of the older ones. My parents came to visit recently, and they brought me like all my old Game Boy games and everything, so I've been playing Pokemon Blue, which is... It's been an experience. It was like my favorite game in the sixth grade, so I thought I'd give it another shot. And
what was your starting Pokemon?
Squirtle.
Ah, there we
Always.
Go.
Yeah.
There we go.
Mm-hmm.
As long as you choose Bulbasaur, that's fine, because nobody likes Bulbasaur.
Okay, so this is a good segue here. What keeps you playing Pokemon? Like, what motivates you? I'm assuming that you've logged millions of hours into it, probably.
I shudder to think how many hours I have spent playing Pokemon across my life.
So what's the thing that, I mean, like, where's this urge coming from to keep playing?
I guess it just... I never get tired of it, even though I've spent so many hours playing, and I can't identify what exactly it is. I think it's part of it is just that it's a really good, well done. I want to say simple, but not simple in a derogatory way. Just simple in like it's easy to pick up and play for a few minutes whenever I can, and if I don't play it for 2 weeks, I can pick it up and I'm not lost. I know exactly where I'm going with it and.
Right, no, but so is tic-tac-toe, right?
Yeah.
So is there, like, maybe if I can delve deeper a little bit, you know, is there something there that, something specific that is, like, the thing that makes you keep coming back for it?
I've got something I want to talk about with this, because I've been thinking about it a lot, because I'll pick up, I have Leaf Green, and I have, like, I've gotten, like, 5 badges, and then I'll, like, set it down for a couple months, and I'll come back to it, and be like, yeah, play it for a couple hours, and then set it down again. And I feel like just that nostalgic feeling of being like, yeah, I did this for, like, 400 hours back when I was a kid, and I really, those hooks get back into me, and I'm like, I want to go catch, I want to, like, it just is fun to go out there and kill, like, stuff for an hour and just get bored of it and then come back to it every once in a while again, right. And all your permanent status still stays there.
Yeah. Now, Caitlin, if you've listened to past episodes, you might have listened to some of the past episodes where I routinely enjoy chiding the other people on the show for not being able to adequately explain why something is fun. And I'm not going to get so hard on you because you're new here.
I appreciate that. Well, one thing that has been getting me to play Soul Silver a lot is I was talking to my roommate about it, about the fact that I've never caught them all. As much Pokemon as I've played, I've never filled up my Pokedex. And that became a goal of mine a little bit with Soul Silver. And then I realized that that was crazy. And I would just stick to... the smaller aspects that I found really fun. Like, one thing that's great is being able to battle your friends. I have yet to get bored of, you know, having this rivalry and having, like, these really cute little animals that I'm just, like, sending into vicious battle.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. One thing that's interesting that I've noticed, at least, you know, when I play some games and I try to, like, figure out, okay, like, what, like, why have I dumped 200 hours into Disgaea? I don't know if you've played Disgaea. But okay, well, it's a tactic style game that, I don't know. For me, it's hard to come to this realization, right? And maybe I don't know if this is even all of it necessarily, but it seems like a lot of times what motivates people to keep playing the same game, right? Even when the actual mechanics of what they're doing is completely banal, is like just, you know, all that's happening is they either get to see new graphics after a point. Right? Like the novelty of graphics, or they get to see numbers go up, or they get one thing. And like these, like a lot of games will dispense these little things, right? That if you think about it, what you're getting as a reward in retrospect, you're like, that was totally not worth it. But then all the way up to the point of getting that, right? You're just completely focused. Anyway, we'll be back in a bit.
Welcome back to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. So we get subsidized by University of Advanced Technology, UAT.
No, sponsored.
Sponsored. Not subsidized.
That's right. There's no subsidies here.
We don't get paid.
That's right.
We don't get paid.
In case anyone's wondering.
Speaking of sponsoring and UAT, UAT was actually kind enough to sponsor the IGDA Game Jam this past weekend and let us use their... amazing facilities and all that. So their website is uat.edu.
Oh, thank you so much, guys. I was just about to mention the website. That was wonderful. I always like it when other people can chime in and help us out on the show. All right. So we'll talk about IGDA in a little bit, but we were getting some good steam with this topic here. So, Caitlin, you mentioned something really interesting over the break that I think we could spend a few minutes on.
Oh, okay. Well, what I started saying, we were talking before the show about racing games, and I mentioned that I don't tend to like them very much because I'm terrible at them, and I think that maybe part of what I really like about Pokemon is that I'm really good at it, and so it's easy for me to pick up and play. I know I'm not going to play it for an hour and end up really, like, frustrated and mad at the end. I'm going to be in a good mood because I just I just won.
Yeah, so this is really fascinating to me, because if you talk to people about the games they like the most, usually it tends to coincide with the games that they're best at, right? And so this brings up a really interesting question, which is, do we just like stuff that we're good at? Or let me spin it another way. Do we like stuff because we're good at it?
Well, I think part of it might be, too, that we happen to like something and then we play it so much that we get good at it.
Right. Well, there's that, right? Yeah. But on the other hand, right, there's this barrier sometimes, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, every game's got some kind of barrier to entry, right?
Yeah.
And when that learning curve is too steep, right, then you want to give up before the point that you get good at it, right? But also I think that, you know, maybe it's a little more complicated, right? Like, let's talk about, like, consider multiplayer games, mm-hmm. for example, right? I've always held the contention that, you know, multiplayer games in general are easier to make good than regular single-player games, because a lot of the fun of a multiplayer game is the interactions you have with other people.
Very true.
Which, as long as the game facilitates that, right,
mm-hmm.
has nothing to do with the game.
Yeah.
Right? So, and that coupled with, you know, this observation that, like, you know, yeah, if you're playing a game that you're not good at, right, what games, I'm going to flip it around, right, what games do you like that you're bad at? Think about that for a second.
StarCraft.
Yeah.
I like playing it, but I'm terrible at it.
But there's very few, isn't there?
Yeah, but I think the reason I like StarCraft is because I feel like every time I learn a new trick, every time I lose against somebody, I watch the replay and I feel like I get a little bit better by watching their build order.
Right, you've learned something.
Well, have you guys ever read the book Flow?
No.
I have not, but I should.
Yes. It's about, in this book, they argue that you're truly at your happiest when you're in that point where you're working, and you still have, like, goals you have set. So, like, if you're not doing anything, you're unhappy. If you're, like, really good at something and you have nothing else to do, you're not happy either. It's that middle point where you're working towards a goal and you have, like, all of the tools to get there. That's when you're at your happiest moment.
Yeah.
So that's what I think plays into this.
Right. And not only that, actually, like, okay, I have to restrain myself before I launch into a tirade because, I'm just going to put that aside. But that's a really good point. There's something funny that happens when, okay, my mind's going again. All right, do you guys have anything else to say on this topic?
I've got something off topic.
Why not? Let's just, let's go really schizophrenic.
Well, the only thing that I wanted to say was that the chat room says you'll never be a Pokemon master with that kind of attitude.
Oh, wow.
And that's a challenge.
Is a challenge.
Yeah,
but see, with what you're saying about flow, then maybe I won't enjoy Pokemon anymore after I've become the master and I'm not working towards a goal.
There's only one way to find out, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so. So, I don't know. I'm up to almost 200 right now in Soul Silver. So
you're halfway there.
I'm gonna keep going. I think it's like 493 now.
Oh, Lord.
With the Pokedex or something like that. So, well, I feel like by the time I get to the point where I'm really close to finishing Soul Silver's Pokedex, Pokemon Black and White are gonna come out, and I'm just gonna have to start all over again. But
you can probably import them. So
yeah, true.
Okay, you know what? We're about halfway through this segment, so why don't we actually talk about the IGDA now?
All right,
I think that's
good.
A good idea. Okay, cool. So, all right, why don't you just tell us a little bit, Caitlin, about, you know, what the IGDA is, how you got involved, we'll go from there.
Well, the IGDA, like I said, it is the International Game Developers Association, and we have a local Phoenix chapter of it, and the kind of overall goal of the IGDA is basically just to be a group for game developers in a lot of different ways. It provides different ways to get involved. Like they have special interest groups and things like that. So if you're a writer or they have a group for women in games, and you can, you know, talk with other women who are at all different companies around the world and kind of share your similar experiences and things like that. So that's like the overall IGDA. And then the Phoenix chapter, we have just been started back up a few months ago. And we meet once a month. We have one big meeting a month with everyone. And we have one speaker who actually this month, August 5th, is going to be Ara speaking, so we're very excited about that. And,
so you should definitely come to that meeting.
Yeah, 7 p.m. August 5th, Boulders on Broadway in Tempe. So I'll see you all there.
And you guys have a website, right?
We do have a website. It's igdaphx.org. and
cool.
can check out our blog there. And in addition to our monthly meeting, we do things like I said, we had a game jam this past weekend, which is where for a weekend people get together and in 48 hours make a game, or as close to a game as they can get in 48 hours. And people use it for making like actual full games and for just learning new engines and things like that. So we're also working on getting an arcade cabinet together that has all local Phoenix games on it. And that is an ongoing project for us. So
now, I'm kind of curious about these game jams because I always mean to go, but then something comes up and I don't, and I feel bad about that. But there's one thing I'm really curious about, and I don't know, maybe you have some insight into this. How do they work? Because I'll tell you why I'm asking this question, because when I'm involved in making games, there's a continual struggle to figure out what the game is. You know, there's a lot of parties that are always pulling it in different directions. And you know, in a lot of times, just even in commercial game development, right? There's stakeholders all over the place that pull the game in different directions, right? And I can't even, it's hard for me to conceive of accomplishing something material in a span of 48 hours.
Yeah.
So how do they do it?
I think a lot of what it comes down to is having a very realistic idea of what you can get done in 48 hours. And
right.
Small teams, that's a big asset in this. It seems like, oh, well, if you would have a bigger team, then, you know, everyone can work together and get more done. But usually
right.
what happens
that's worse, isn't
with
it?
Bigger teams, oh my gosh,
yeah.
it's so much worse. It's so much worse. Because there's always either someone who has nothing to do at some given point, or everyone's working, and then after they've been working for like a day, they realize that they've all been working on really slightly different projects, and it was just never communicated. So a lot of how it works is at the beginning of the game jam on Friday night, we'll have we'll announce the theme, and then we have about an hour to brainstorm. And then at the end of that brainstorming period, everyone will kind of gather together and present their ideas. And some of the things we've had at past game jams, there was for Ludum Dare was our last game jam, and the theme was
not Dare.
No, I don't think so. Or actually, wait, no, the one.
So, when I read the first time, I'm like, Ludum Dare. That's maybe not the right way to say it.
Yeah, I think it is Ludum Dare. But actually, what I'm thinking of was the Global Game Jam, and the theme was deception. And some of the different ideas and concepts that were presented were, a tutorial that lies to the player. That was one deception.
Nice.
And then
some normal games do that, by the way.
Yeah. A husband cheating on his wife was another deception. And presenting items of different sizes that can change based on what the player does, like being deceived about the size of like a tunnel that's in front of you and things like that. So after those ideas were presented, people formed into little teams and just kind of figured out a really basic plan of what they wanted to do for the game for that weekend. And the biggest thing of how it works is just keeping it small, keeping it realistic, not letting, you know, feature creep take hold.
Right.
And yeah. I don't know. It works differently for basically everyone. Everyone who participates does it, has their own way of figuring out what they can do in one weekend.
Cool. Well, there's the music again. We've got half a show left. Please join us for the remainder. All right, and we're back. It's Chatterbox Video Game Radio. We've got our guest of the hour here. It's Caitlin Ellis from the local Phoenix IGDA chapter. I would have to pause before I say that acronym because
a lot of people,
the D just wants to come out first.
IDGA. Yeah. It kind of has a rhythm to it when you say IDGA.
We should like write him a letter and say you should just call it IDGA because that's what it
International
means.
Developers of Games
sure.
Association.
There you
yeah.
go. So once again, our phone line is 866-536-1100. I'm pissing you off. Colin's pissing you off. I hate to think that Caitlin's pissing anyone off, but you can call. You can even call if you're not pissed off for any reason at all, as long as it's video game related. And we'll make a few exceptions if it's cool enough, if it's not. Okay, so we were talking about game jams, right? So you guys do these on a pretty regular basis.
Yeah. We actually have another one coming up August 13th through the 15th.
So who can participate in a game jam if they're interested?
Anyone can participate. The only difference with the one that's coming up, they're doing a competition with it. And if you want to be in the competition, your team has to only be 3 people.
Okay.
But otherwise, you're always welcome to just go and learn from people. One of the best things about a game jam is that you have a bunch of people all in a room together working on games, and every single person there is an expert in something. So if you are a Flash programmer and you want to learn how to program for Android phones, then you can go and there will be someone who can help you out with learning how to do that in a weekend. So
now, would you say that there's tell me if this is appropriate. Is there like a minimum level of experience recommended if you're interested in this, or if you're just totally new? You know, is that like, are people cool or they get pissed off at you?
People are generally very cool. It may be a little bit different with this next one because a lot of people will be in kind of a competition mindset.
Yeah,
but
they'll be wearing like headbands.
Exactly. Yeah, it's gonna be pretty hardcore. But there'll still be people who aren't in the competitive aspect of it and are just kind of in it more for the fun, and everyone's always welcome no matter what your skill level is. If you want to, you know, be able to work on a game and see you finish a project in a weekend, even if it's not something that you're, you know, gonna want to show off in your portfolio for the rest of your life,
let's make a hello
okay.
world. That's my plan. I'm gonna go in there.
For the global game jam, the theme that I mentioned that was a husband cheating on his wife, That was my game with two of the other board members of IGDA, the vice chair and secretary. We worked on a game called Doing It with the Maid, and it was a point and click adventure. So
this reminds me of Don't Poop the Bed. That's what it reminds me of.
Oh yeah.
So maybe you can combine those into one, and that'll be a really big mess.
Sounds good.
All right. So tell us about the meetings. What goes on at the meetings?
A lot of what goes on at the meetings is basically just getting to meet other local developers and hopefully learn a little bit, depending on what our speaker is any given month. We kind of cover a lot of different topics with that, but my general hope for the meeting is that everyone leaves the meeting having met someone that they hadn't met before, and that it's a really worthwhile contact that they've made, and that everyone gets to leave more excited about game development than they were when they went in.
And if you're not a developer but you're interested in development, those people are welcome to come as well.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Right on. So let's see here. I'm kind of curious about how you got involved into all of this.
I went to school in the Midwest. I went to the University of Missouri, and although the Midwest is a wonderful place, there's not a lot of game development there. So I moved out to the Phoenix area, and for me, coming from central Missouri, there were so many developers, and it was crazy to me that there wasn't an IGDA chapter here that was active. And my friend Peter Jones, who has since moved away, but he was here at the time working with RetroEffect, which he's still working with, just from New Hampshire now. He wanted to get the IGDA chapter here back up and running because he was used to being in Boston and Montreal, where they have really amazing chapters. And basically, the IGDA is just such a good resource for developers. And I really wanted to see one happen here. And whenever Pete had to move away, I kind of took the reins from him, I guess, and have been working on getting everything getting more steam for everything ever since then.
Right on. Okay, so why don't we give out the website one more time?
Okay, and then, it's igdaphx.org. And if you have any questions about getting involved or anything like that, you can shoot me an email at Caitlin, which is Caitlin, at igdaphx.org.
And you guys are interested in, you know, getting all kinds of people to support the chapter and the community,
oh, yeah.
not just like developers or,
right,
or
right.
programmers.
Well,
right?
one of our big goals is to basically bring more development into the Phoenix area because we have a great area for it. We have low cost of living.
Yep.
We have, for the most part, great weather. And we have schools here that are producing so many great future game developers, and then they graduate and there just aren't enough companies here for them.
So we should chain them here before they get a chance to leave.
Yeah, that's actually
that is the
IGDA Phoenix mission statement.
So you guys are looking for, on top of developers, like writers and artists and people to kind of like help
yeah,
with that too?
Absolutely.
Okay.
All right, very good. So if you're interested, there's all the info. We'll see if, Colin, are you able to update the page with actual text? Our webpage?
I'll put it in the show notes. I know
okay,
how to do
show
that for
notes.
Sure.
Okay, so we'll put some information on how to contact Caitlin and the IGDA in those notes so that if you don't have a pen handy or whatever, it's not lost. All right, so let's see. You know what, guys? I think it's time for the quiz. Do we have any quiz music, Norm? Any quiz music at all?
Some
any
Jeopardy?
Ballroom dancing?
Really trying to get something.
Maybe? Ballroom dancing? Anything? We got a short deadline here. I'll even take the theme from SWAT or something. Okay, silence. Okay, well that's too bad. We're just gonna. All right, there's our quiz theme. Okay,
that
so
needs to be permanent.
That was an excellent quiz theme.
So Caitlin, you may not be aware of this, but from time to time, I like to basically quiz whoever happens to be on the show with some unexpected kind of thing, and we'll just test your knowledge of video games. And lately, these have been quizzes about sales. So the topic for tonight, between you two, I want to see how well you can figure out, you can name what the top five best-selling games of 2010 are with the least number of incorrect guesses.
For the Wii or for everything?
For everything.
Oh, God.
Oh, okay.
The top five.
Super Mario Galaxy 2.
No, that's not it at all, I bet you.
No, that's not it.
Modern Warfare 2? Was that last year or was that this year?
Modern Warfare 2, that's correct.
Can
we get some like buzzers and dings, Norm?
Okay. Red Dead Redemption.
All right.
I don't think Red Dead Redemption's on there, is it? Is it? I don't think so.
Is it? Not only is it on there,
what?
It's number one.
Yes.
What?
All right.
So okay, we've got three more.
Are you even for the Wii?
Any console?
Are any of them for the Wii? Can you give us the hint?
I'm asking the questions here.
Let's see. I'm totally.
You guys are
stumped.
Okay,
here.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll give you guys a hint.
Okay.
Two of them are for the Wii.
Oh God.
One
oh.
is not.
New Super Mario Bros. Is that on there?
Yes. Oh. That's number two.
Oh. What's up, Norm?
Okay. If we weren't discombobulated before, we really are now.
All right,
you guys have got the top three.
Oh, nice.
So this is kind of like Price is no. What is the other show?
Jeopardy?
No, the other one.
Price is Right?
No, Family Feud.
Oh, Family Feud.
Yeah, we're
yes.
kind of doing a little Family Feud thing like Alon does at PAX every year. So, got number four and five. They're still out there.
One's for the Wii.
One's for the Wii. One's for the PS3 and Xbox 360.
Okay.
Is it like, what's the Wii Island? What's that one?
Yes,
Wii Sports Resort?
Yes, Wii Island.
Yeah.
No,
Wii Sports
no,
Resort?
No, no.
Wii Play?
No, wrong.
No, that
wrong.
Was like, oh, shoot.
2008, I don't know. That was wild.
Was
ago.
It the Demon Swords one? What was that?
No, Demon Souls, I would have...
There's no way. There's no way
no,
that's not...
Or
that's not,
Muramasa?
Yes, Muramasa.
No,
I wish
there's
it could
no
be,
way it was either.
But no.
I like can't even think of any other games that came out for the Wii. That's really sad.
It has... See, if I give you a hint for this, it'll give it away.
Okay.
But maybe that's a good
Animal
hint.
Crossing? I don't know.
Wrong.
If you give us a hint...
Is it Mario?
It is not Mario.
What console is the other game for? Is it multi-platform?
PS3 and Xbox 360. The next one is a sequel.
God.
Wait, the Wii one is a sequel?
No, the one that's not Wii.
Okay, the other one.
Not unlike Modern Warfare 2.
So it's a shooter. Mass Effect 2?
I can see you guys are not big shooter fans.
What came out? I don't even... It's the internet.
Oh, cheater.
Okay. The Wii one involves a peripheral.
It's not the Wii balance board thing? I don't know.
Wii Fit?
Wii Fit Plus.
Wii Fit
Plus. Are you serious?
Yes, Wii Fit Plus is number five.
Wow.
That's right. Yep, that many people were duped into buying that one.
We have that.
Okay, so I'm just going to tell you the last one unless you guys want to take any more stabs.
One more shot? A shooter? I don't even Battlefield Company? Battlefield 2?
Yeah.
Bad Company? Oh,
Bad Company 2.
I didn't know
yes.
Man.
That was obvious.
Those are the top five games sales-wise.
Okay.
So you guys did pretty well. That was fun. All right. So we've got about a minute left. I know something we can talk about that is worth less than a minute of discussion. All this crazy stuff going on with... people calling each other names in the game industry.
Oh, yeah, all the gossip.
Apparently,
I think he meant it.
Apparently, what's that other guy? Mark Rain got into some trouble.
I think he meant it.
Apparently, what's that other guy? Mark Rain got into some trouble for blurting out, but he apologized for it. It's exciting times. We'll be back.
It's me? Oh, okay.
It's you, brother. It's you.
Welcome to the Chatterbox Video Game Radio Show again. We're in our fourth and final segment.
All right. So we got to mention UAT again, our wonderful sponsor. You can go to uat.edu and find out about all the programs about learning how to make games. Playing games in the lunchroom, all that good stuff. All right. So let's... our guest, Caitlin, from the IGDA chapter, is still here. We're just going to chat about some just little random things involving things, words that you actually can say on the air, like what I did a couple seconds ago. Here's an interesting story. There was a conference, last week, the Develop Conference, right? And one of the there was a talk on the conference where... the speaker was basically explaining how casual games on Xbox Live Arcade are tremendously overrepresented in advertising versus sales. And I found this to be interesting. Now, by this guy's measure, and his name is Sean Murray. He's a programmer at Hello Games, which developed the game Joe Danger on PSN. So he contends that games like, Uno and Sudoku and, Caitlin, you'll find out about me. I don't like the word casual, but I'll suffer through this for a moment just so we can talk about it easily. The casual games on that on Xbox Live are actually about 31% by his measure of how much... Well, that's the proportion of games that are casual, let's say, right? But they only represent about 5% of the sales. And a game like Uno, right, is kind of frequently put forward as a demonstration of, casual games are really popular because of Uno, right? But he says that, that's not really valid because they've hyped the crap out of Uno, right? And, they've bundled it. It's highly, highly visible. They've given it a lot of promotion that a lot of games on there don't have. So I don't know. What are you guys' reactions to this, Caitlin?
I think maybe part of it is that why they might be taking making fewer sales is that the... Sorry to use this word, but casual market.
You don't have to apologize for it. I just have to apologize to myself because I'm a weirdo.
okay. It's changing a lot. It's changing partially because of Facebook and things like that, and people are getting their casual games elsewhere. And
so you think maybe Xbox Live Arcade isn't casual enough? Like the casual people or the people who like that sort of thing? I'm really getting into hot water.
Yeah,
like they're going actually to like Facebook. You think?
Well, yeah. I mean, if I am in the mood to play something casual, I'm generally not going to like instantly go to my Xbox. Like that's not really what I think of when I think of casual gaming. I think of Bejeweled on my iPad.
And if you think of like the quality of game that is on X, like there are great quality games, mm-hmm. the best selling games. I was just looking at all the top selling games, and they're all great games. But the vast majority of games on there aren't good. Like there's ghetto games out there that no one should play. And I think that the production companies behind them are kind of being like, hey, we'll put a lot of advertising out there and hopefully that'll make a difference in the sales figures. Like if a game's good and people and it's got a lot of hype, then how much are they advertising it, especially on Xbox Live Arcade?
Yeah, there's a lot of really subtle, interesting stuff going on with how games sell and how they're promoted on Xbox Live Arcade, right? Because mm-hmm. it's like the interface itself
is designed to buy.
Well, it's designed to buy, but also like the way that the interface works affects how games are sold, and the visibility of games in that interface, I'm sure, also substantially affects which ones get sold. You know, it's kind of, I don't know, it's this ever-present issue, right, of like, well, the games that are hyped the most sell the most, right? Mm-hmm. And they sell the most because they're hyped the most, not because they're necessarily the best, right?
And the top little like thing that you get to click on is the top, like the highest rated top selling games. And it's like if those are the first option you get, and those are the ones you're gonna buy.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And those are usually the most visible, right? So the games that do well, they get like an additional boost, right? Kind mm-hmm. of at the expense of pretty much all the other product on there. So that's kind of interesting. But that's a good point, Caitlin. You know, there's nothing more casual than playing for free.
Yeah.
Right. So once you introduce a cost into your activity, that's automatically a barrier that.
Yeah.
On top of an Xbox and on top of a controller and a gold account and stuff like that.
Right. Right.
Well,
right.
And part of why there may be so many casual games, like if you look at Uno is a game that already exists. In order to put it onto Xbox, all you have to do is like remake it for the Xbox. It's not like design. It's not like making Joe Danger. So you can make more of those games. So it makes sense that they are making up a lot of the games that are on Xbox Live Arcade. Is this making sense?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. That's also the evergreen issue or problem with games is that, you know, they take time to make, so they cost money to make, and most publishers are interested in the minimum cost,
mm-hmm.
Which, you know, unless you're a very small group of people that actually really cares about the product, usually results in substandard product, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Then you get into this whole thing of, you know, they're trying to maximize sales and minimize pissed off people, although that kind of gets ignored, I guess, a little bit. Okay, we've got another story here. This to me is, I saw this on Gamma Sutra, a couple weeks ago. This is really, I don't know, this is really interesting to me. There's a headline, right, that says, survey, 64% of gamers still prefer hard copies to digital. And I'm like, still? Like, 64? What that really means, right, if I can turn that around, 46% prefer digital copies? Really? I'm really shocked at this figure.
I'm all for that.
I feel like
You're not into.
No, I'm all into the digital copies.
You're into digital. Okay,
yeah.
How about you, Caitlin?
I'm not. I like to be able to hold it.
I like it when it's done right. That's what I like.
Yeah. Well, I'll agree with that.
The big thing that kind of converted me was playing with Steam and being able to like have my Steam Cloud achievements saved anywhere.
Right.
I can download a game over and over again as much as I want, and it's like, oh, my hard drive's all filled up. I can just delete it, and then it'll take like maybe an hour or two to download it again and play it.
Yeah.
Especially with something like Portal or Half-Life 2 that I just want to get it and play it really quick. And then if I get tired of it, just uninstall it and then re-download it, you know? You don't have to worry about, because I've had games where like I gave the key to somebody, I registered it to somebody else, and then like I wanted to play it and couldn't do it.
Yeah.
I would have it tied to my account so I can play it as much as possible, whenever I want, on whatever platform I want.
I guess with PC games, I would rather use Steam than have a hard copy.
Yeah.
But
yeah, this is funny because I don't buy a lot of PC games.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I don't play a lot of PC games. There's no specific reason for that. But I guess I would be less attached if I think about it. I would be less attached to owning a hard copy if it was on the PC versus a console. I'm not really sure for why that is.
Yeah.
But when it comes to the console, yeah, it's, I don't know, it just feels so ethereal for me to just download a game and for me to not actually have a physical copy
of it. Yeah. I think on consoles, your hard drive is at a premium too. Like with my, I only have a 20-gig hard drive on my Xbox.
That's a really good point. I have the same thing, right? And Forza 3 takes up like 6 or 7 gigs.
I installed, what is it, Elder Scrolls, the Morrowind, not Morrowind, Oblivion. And it's like, that's taking up half my hard drive. Yeah. And I have the expansion installed too. So I'm like, I don't know if I can like, I want to do, like, if I can install all my games on there, it'd be great, but I can't.
And don't download anything from the DLC while you're playing the game, while you're in the middle of the game, because that will corrupt your save file.
Will it?
Yeah, I've learned that the hard way after 200 hours.
Oh, my gosh.
And no refunds.
That's terrible.
Yeah, and we will not service your save file.
On consoles, by the way. Okay, another way that Steam works way better than consoles is they're crazy insane sales.
Yeah.
If you go on Xbox Live and you try to buy like a full game, like I was thinking about Mass Effect, I wanted to play. That game is so old. It's still $20 to drop on Mass Effect. I can get it for $3 on Steam.
You're right. I mean, everything does get a lot more appetizing once prices go down far.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So the funny thing about this article is that there's this quote in here, right? This is some kind of, who is this? This is some research firm. The director of this research firm that did this study said, physical games discs have a long and well-established history, which is a deep mindset to change. That's ironic, considering that music has a more established history.
Yeah.
And, I mean, those things... Music hardly exists on, you know, hard copy anymore.
Except if you're Prince.
Except if you're Prince, I guess.
I don't know if you saw a story. Resale value, too, with a hard copy. Yeah. You can sell it back, get the money for it.
That's true. All right. Well, you guys hear the music just as well as I do, and unfortunately that means we're at the end of another show. So, Caitlin, thank you very much for your time,
for
coming out here.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, it was a blast. Maybe sometime later you can come on again, and we'll have some good times. Colin.
Definitely.
As always.
Our trusty intern, thank you very much. All right, guys, that's it. We'll be back next week.
You've been listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. Tune in next week for more tips and info and the latest and greatest in video gaming. And remember, all your base are belong to us.